Greg, let's start off with you giving us a brief description of the most important dynamics in economies and markets that you're seeing right now.
Yeah, well, the highest level, the big deal is that we've entered this new paradigm. We've entered it very quickly because of the pandemic. We were talking about this in the last strategic report, how you're going to get this merger of fiscal policy and monetary policy, and how that was coming because you have this huge divergences in wealth and huge conflict, both domestic and internationally, that's going to lead to the need of this new policy. And really, in terms of the big things going on, that need is different in different countries because of very different secular conditions. So in part of the East, China, et cetera, you still have positive interest rates. You have a different type of need for these types of policies than you have in most of the West and the older, more established developed world economies. They require MP3. Other countries don't. That difference is a big difference. It's going to lead to big differences in returns across currencies and across assets around the world. The second thing is that there's so much excess liquidity. The printing that's occurred already has created record levels of cash. At the same time, the value of that cash is being devalued as quickly as the governments can manufacture it. So the devaluation of cash is the second big deal thing that's still going on. And that's happening with big differentials and big imbalances and mispricing due to the fact that the way those policy levers are being pulled in different countries is so different. So you've had huge shifts in balance of payments as a result and big opportunities because those imbalances are playing out quite differently. And finally, the next big thing we talk about is the risk of wealth destruction, that you have these policies going on. When you look at the history of how crises, debt crises have been handled in the past, crises like these have been handled in the past, there have been major periods of wealth destruction. And recognizing the way to create a portfolio that's acceptable for a wide range of the different ways this could play out, and the fact that most assets have periods of huge destruction, and when you have as volatile a set of circumstances as you currently do, particularly with how quickly policies are shifting and how quickly money and credit is shifting, that recognizing that risk of wealth destruction, particularly when you get to the point where policymakers can't necessarily get what they want. Today, easy policy is relatively easy in the sense that because there's a global deflationary pressures, you print money, you spend money, and you get better outcomes. Eventually, you'll get to a world where printing money and spending money won't necessarily lead to better outcomes for assets, and you'll have to choose between driving a deflationary policy and driving your currency down in a way that's not desirable. And at that point, you could face significant wealth destruction depending on which assets and which currencies you're in.
Bob, Greg mentioned the big divergences between East and West with a particular focus on the importance of China. Can you elaborate on what is driving those divergences and what it means for investors today?
At the high level, what we see is that the main forces that drive economies, of which that we think there are four big forces that drive economies. There's productivity, which drives long-term wealth and income in the country. There's a long-term debt cycle, which reflects sort of indebtedness and the responsiveness of the economy to different policies. There's the short-term debt cycle, which is the business cycle and largely is a function of those policies and the ebbs and flows of money and credit. And then there's politics, and politics is really determines who's pulling the levers and what's motivating the pulling, right? And so when you look at those circumstances, those four drivers, and you compare different countries around the world, you see them in very different situations. So when I look at the United States, the U.S. is looking at low productivity growth, not just the United States, but most of the old world. Most of the existing kind of established reserve currency countries are looking at low over the next decade, low productivity growth, and therefore a low rate of true real wealth creation. Latter stages of the long-term debt cycles. The reason that we're at a zero interest rate is because of that. It's a classic indicator that you're in that stage where the indebtedness is high and you're forced to sort of push rates down to stimulate, and finally you hit the zero bound. Then you have the short-term debt cycle. What we used to think about as the boom-bust cycle is going to be a lot different now. It'll be driven by fiscal with monetary policy because you don't have the ability to move the interest rates. And so the ability to create a boom is probably is very restrictive. And then we go to the politics, and the politics is what brings in populism, political divisiveness, the ability or the inability to make effective decisions. And on all four of those counts, the U.S. is looking at, the U.S. and most of the developed world economies are looking at a difficult set of circumstances across all four of those criteria. Now, when you look at the on the other side of the planet, when you look at the Eastern Hemisphere, you look at Asia, you look at China, almost all four of those across the board are favorable. Even though China has high levels of debt, they've done a very good job of circumventing too much. And so they've been, for the last 5 years or so, they've been, has been a priority to sort of gently tap the brakes so that it doesn't get out of hand. From a cyclical standpoint, there's plenty of room to stimulate the economy, both from fiscal and from monetary. Productivity over the next 10 years is likely to be pretty strong, you know, 4 to 6% productivity growth over the next 10 years. And the degree of populism and divisiveness within the countries is not anywhere near what it is in the Western Hemisphere in the United States. And essentially, the governments are able to continue to manage things roughly as normal. So on the basis of those two perspectives, looking across the board at those four big drivers of growth, we see a decade ahead of a pretty big divergence between East and West, between the U.S. and China, which is really just a continuation of the secular trends that we've already experienced. But now we're in a situation where what's priced in is the opposite, where because of the interest rate structure and the pricing structure of assets, actually what's priced in is an appreciation and an outperformance of the U.S. and the Western Hemisphere in relation to Asia. So we have this confluence where these, you know, unsustainable conditions, unsustainable flows are discounting prices that are discounting unsustainable economic scenarios in our view. And it's really arguing from a tactical standpoint, at least, to shift money in that direction. But we would say, even from a strategic standpoint, to be thinking about balancing your beta much more between East and West, between the U.S. and China, particularly as China opens up, in order to diversify yourself against these forces. We'll go on and on and on in terms of the other implications of that. But you've got the growing conflict, and you've got a trade war. We've had a trade war. You could have capital wars. You could have technology wars. You could have military wars. And these things typically unfold in sequence. So you're getting compensated for the risks either way, but the nature of the risks in the different parts of the world are different. And therefore, there's a true level of diversification that's achieved through that kind of a geographic balance.
Right. And so just to add to what Bob's saying, so few investors are actually balanced. And so whether you believe the alpha view of being more bullish on one relative to the other, even if you don't believe that, the benefits of balance that you're getting almost for free, the diversification benefit that so few are taking advantage of, is kind of the simplest and the biggest available lever for investors, which is you've got totally different issues, risks all over the world, but to be able to diversify those risks in a way that is largely not tapped into by most investors, and having a global portfolio that looks like the world, that's balanced both for different geographies, but also for different environments. And so that's kind of the most important step we think strategically investors can take.